Hello and welcome to the show, all my fellow fans of horror. I told you I would be consistent now. Alright, so I'm not gonna dilly-dally my way around this intro here. So I've decided to add sort of a new segment to these podcast episodes, that being me talking about the two narrations that I also did this week. So, like, we'll have this little introductory segment, and then we'll move into a segment that's me talking about, you know, the two episodes I did this week. Just, you know, like, my thoughts on them, and, you know, how the process went about it, and stuff like that, and just, you know, like, my general experience and stuff like that. And then afterwards, after that segment, we'll get into, like, you know, the main segment that I usually do, that being just, like, talking or reviewing or giving news about things or anything like that. So today's episode is going to consist of me talking about the narration I did on Tuesday, known as The Hooded Man, and the narration I did on Thursday, which was SCP-542. And then we're going to move into the review segment, where I talk about the Alfred Hitchcock movie Rear Window, as you could probably tell from the title. So, without further ado, I want you all to just sit back and relax, let in the beautiful moonlight, and forget all the struggles of today's world as I prepare to both entertain and horrify you. Okay, so first we're moving into our just sort of like a discussion segment, or I guess like channel news segment, I don't know, whatever, you know, patent pending and all that sort of thing. But regardless, first I want to talk about the narration I did on Tuesday called The Hooded Man. And this one was kind of fun to do because, you know, it's sort of like a classic in a way, because it's the story that's behind the classic creepypasta character that is known as Hoodie, who is also a Slenderman creepypasta. He's not a Slenderman creepypasta, he's a Slenderman proxy, so I guess he's kind of part of that. He was also featured in the YouTube series Marvel Hornets a couple of times. So, he's got an interesting history, and, you know, I figured it was about time I covered one of the classic creepypasta stories that has been around for years and years now. And I figured that Hoodie was a good one to sort of, like, you know, just kind of start off with and, you know, dip my toes into some of the classics a bit. Of course, I'm going to go into some of the more well-known classics in the future, such as, you know, Maskey or Jeff the Killer, or, you know, some of those. I will cover those eventually, and I will cover, like, different versions and reimagining of the characters as well. So you don't have to worry about that, as they will come eventually. I was even thinking of, making a few versions myself, what's my interpretation, you know, like, if I could remake a classic creepypasta that's been around for years, like, if I was the one who had wrote it, you know, what would have I made it? I think that would be kind of fun to do. I don't know when I'll do that, but I will do it eventually, I assure you. But yeah, anyway, overall, pretty nice story to tell. The writing itself, though, is kind of simplistic. And you can tell it's, you know, it's a kind of an older story. It was clearly written by somebody who's kind of on the younger side, I would probably say. At least I assume. Some of the English in it is somewhat broken. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It's not broken in a way where English, like, isn't their first language or something. It's just broken in, like, where they probably just mistyped it, didn't catch it, and then just never edited it or fixed it. I don't mean this to bash the author in any way, by the way. I'm just, you know, giving my honest opinions and, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, like, the story itself is, like, kind of simplistic. Kind of doesn't make the most sense in certain aspects. Like, why would he just go crazy after getting a really nice hoodie? And, like, it's even expressed in the beginning that it wasn't through, like, any sort of supernatural means or anything like that. So I don't know, it just really doesn't make sense why he just suddenly goes from normal person to murderous psychopath after finding a cool hoodie. So I don't know. It really doesn't make sense. Maybe that's why people like made him a Slender Man proxy as a way to sort of explain it, even though the story says that it wasn't due to any supernatural force, but I don't know. Anyway, I digress. Overall, good story. It birthed the classic character that's loved by many. But the story itself is too simplistic and doesn't really make sense and could have used a lot of further elaboration or maybe just some basic ironing out. trying to think here. It was, at the very least, it was kind of easy to edit around because wasn't that long of a story, and I didn't make that many mistakes while recording it. So it was a pretty easy story to edit. However, it was like somewhat hard to get a thumbnail because obviously there's a lot of artwork done of Hoodie, and I didn't want to get copyright claimed. Obviously, like, I always try to credit authors whenever I can. Like, whenever I can find the source of an art piece, I will always credit the author or artist whenever I use art that isn't mine or done by a friend of mine as the thumbnail. Unless I just straight up can't find the original creator. But regardless, I always try to, and I know that there's a lot of art out there, and I know that, like, you know, most of the time, as long as you credit the artist and say, like, hey, this isn't mine, then, like, you know, most of the time it's fine, but, you know, there's always just that voice in the back of my mind that's like, oh, you're gonna get sued or whatever. So it was kind of hard finding a piece of artwork. In the end, I ended up just going with the one that I used because I don't know, it was just easy. Like, it was just easy to, like, be able to credit that one or, you know, whatever. So, in the end, I just used that one because, you know, simplicity's sake. And also just because the artwork done in it is really good and, you know, it gives off a nice creepy vibe. So, I thought it fit well, especially with the character. But yeah, that's all for that one. Now, SCP-542. this one was actually really unique because, I had received a comment on the YouTube version of the compilation video I did of the 5 SCP stories to keep you up at night, which was 5 of the previous SCP narrations I'd done in the past, all edited together for just viewing convenience. And somebody had commented on that video saying, like, hey, great video and stuff like that. And they said, can you do SCP-542? It's one of my favorites and stuff, and, you know, that sort of thing. And I responded saying, yeah, I really like that one as well. I'll make that one the next SCP video I do. Thank you for the suggestion. So that was, it was really nice. So, like, that video was kind of birthed out of a nice reaction between me and, you know, a watcher or a fan, so it was nice, and I was happy to do it for that reason. And if you're out there and you saw that video, or if you're listening to this right now, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that I could do one of your favorite SCPs justice. And yeah, overall, I just hope you enjoyed it, and thank you very much for the suggestion. If any of you out there listening right now want me to cover a specific story, feel free to leave a comment or message me on one of my social media platforms or anything like that, and you know, shoot me a request. I'll happily cover it if I can, and it, you know, just gives me another way to interact with you guys, so I would very much like that. If you have, like, any topics for a podcast episode, feel free to comment them. If you have any suggestions for a creepypasta or a Reddit story or just, you know, anything creepy, just, you know, leave a comment and I'll probably cover it sometime in the future. But onto the video itself and what I thought about it. The video itself was, for the most part, pretty nice to do. This SCP-542, was a bit longer than most of the ones that I've covered so far, at least. The video is almost 20 minutes long. And because of that, I made a few mistakes while reading. Typically the longer ones, they have, you know, a few more mistakes that I have to edit out because of, you know, just, like, you know, length of the document or story. obviously there's more opportunities to make mistakes. And also just, you know, the longer that I read it, you know, the more I get into it in a way, but therefore the more I slip up because like I just become like too much of a robot, I guess you could say, while reading it, and it makes me just slip up. And also sometimes I just generally fumble my words around, as I do sometimes just while normally talking. So yeah, it was somewhat annoying to edit. It was fine to record, but it was just somewhat annoying to edit because I had to edit out a lot of mistakes, and especially with the longer ones, it makes it hard because sometimes I don't give like enough space between takes, so it'll make like the audio that I have to cut out really, really small, so it makes it like hard to get to it and to cut it out and stuff like that. But for the most part, the story itself, narrating it and everything else like that, was really fun to do, and it's honestly one of my favorite SCP stories as well. I just really like the concept of 542, and yeah, it's just a really interesting, cool story. If you haven't watched the video or you haven't read the document, go ahead and do so. I'll put it up in the top right corner in the YouTube version for you to check out. But overall, two pretty good stories. If I had to pick a favorite between the two, I guess I would say that 542 is overall the better story, obviously. But yeah, two pretty good stories for this week's narrations. Can't wait to bring two more to you next week. I'm not entirely sure what they will be yet, but I assure you they will be good. I think I'll probably try to cover a Reddit No Sleep story and then maybe another SCP. We'll see. But yeah. Anyway, that's all for this segment of the podcast. And now to move on to the review of Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window. All right, so Rear Window. Now, Rear Window, very great movie. Overall, amazing movie, in my opinion. The movie was made back in 1954, and other than, you know, some of the quality of the special effects, or just the way people are dressed, or the way they say things in the camera and stuff like that, other than that, it feels like a, like, basically modern-made movie, just because, like, it's really good itself, like just on its own, but the acting is really great, the chemistry between the characters is great, just the way the characters act and do things and the things that they say are just all around great movie. Just want to get like that general opinion out of the way and to let you know what you're getting into, that I love this movie. The reason why I wanted to talk about it is that recently a local theater of mine had a one-night showing of it, like a special one-night showing, and I went to it, and being able to see it in theaters as if I was watching it back in 1954 is just great. I feel it's just it's kind of surreal in a way, because you kind of feel like, you know, you're back in that time space, especially hearing like everyone else's reactions to things, like whenever a dramatic moment happens, you hear people gasping, you know. And it really just feels like, you know, that you went back in time, because it was probably, you know, a lot of people there. It's probably there for some of them, their first time seeing it too. Sorry, I can't speak. And overall, it was just like a really great and awesome experience. And I said, hey, even though this isn't like, you know, like in full concept a horror movie, I should still talk about it on my podcast, you know, because like, even though it's not necessarily horror, it is still like it is still a thriller by all accounts, and it is like a murder mystery anyway, so I still feel like it fits. So yeah, with the general feelings out of the way here, I just wanted to say, sorry, I appear to have lost my train of thought. This is why I should have a co-host to keep me on track. 4 seasons in, and I'm only just now realizing this. Okay, so first off, spoilers. There is going to be spoilers for this movie. Go watch it if you do not want spoilers, and then feel free to come back. But anyway, I wanted to get into some fun facts about the movie. Or I guess I should go over the basic plot first. So basically, this guy who is a reporter, he's not necessarily a reporter, he's a photographer. He gets photos for magazines, you know, that sort of thing. He gets injured because he was at a racetrack getting pictures of said race, but he got injured taking a picture of a car crash that happened on the track. So he's at home with a broken leg, and, you know, he can't go out and do his job. He can't really go anywhere because he's wheelchair bound and has a broken leg. So he's forced to stay in his apartment, and he has not really much to do in terms of entertainment because he lives on his own. So what does he do? He watches his neighbors from his apartment building. So minor stalker alert there, but I guess I can somewhat understand in a way. God, that sounds so bad. It's 1950, okay? That wasn't much to do for a guy with a broken leg for entertainment other than be stuck in his apartment building. And he also, like, he didn't seem to have a radio or a TV or anything like that either, so it's not like he could have listened or watched anything on there. So, I'm trying to give this man the benefit of the doubt, okay? I swear he's our hero in this story. I swear he's not secretly the murderer, I swear. But he has a girlfriend named Lisa. Yeah, Lisa, sorry. And he also has a nurse from the insurance company that takes care of him named Stella. And let me just say this, Stella is the best character in the entire movie. She is so hilarious. She is absolutely hilarious. And just her, like, her comedy is so unbelievably morbid. Like, she just has no filter, which you will not expect for a movie made in 1954. Like, when they're, like, talking about, like, the guy that they suspect of murdering somebody, she gives, like, completely unfiltered, uncensored detail on, like, what she thinks he's doing, what she thinks he did, and stuff like that. She's like, oh, I bet he's cleaning that bathroom because the blood was smeared all over the place, and, you know, like, just like general things like that. And she gives, like, very morbid descriptions. She's like, oh, well, how would you cut up a body, and, you know, and just, like, stuff like that. Like, how would you hide it or store it after it's all cut up, and, you know, just stuff like that. And, like, all the other characters are just like, oh, please, like, why must you say such things? Like everyone's looking at her like she's a maniac, and my goodness, she's the best character in the movie. Oh, man. And also, Lisa is also really, really good in this movie, the character Lisa. So she is the main character's girlfriend, right? And she wants to marry him, but the thing is that she's rich, and he's not poor, but, like, you know, he's just, like, he's, like, kind of the definition of middle class, I guess you could say. Like, you know, he has nothing, like, you know, like, obviously, like, you know, he has enough money to, like, live and feed himself and stuff like that, but he doesn't have enough money to live, like, a lap of luxury or anything like that. And also his job, since he, like, gets photography, he's had to go to some pretty dangerous places, you know, and, like, stuff far away from civilization and stuff like that. So the main reason why he doesn't want to marry her is because he feels like, A, he wouldn't be able to, like, live and survive or fit into her high-class lifestyle, and he's worried that she wouldn't be able to fit into his boring and or dangerous lifestyle. So that's kind of like a somewhat side conflict there. But throughout the movie, it's really nice because, like, at first she doesn't think that there is actually a murder that happened, but then, like, as he says more evidence and she also starts seeing things, she kind of, like, she gets into it, and she starts to believe him, and she becomes, like, sort of, like, his, like, side detective and helps him figure out a lot of things, and he starts, like, realizing, like, oh, maybe she wouldn't be such a bad fit for this sort of thing. Heck, she's helping me solve this murder case after all, and, you know, she's not, like, you know, emotionally distraught or anything like that. Like, you know, it's not negatively affecting her in any way, so, you know, maybe she can handle this, and, like, it's just really nice to see their relationship grow after all that. Give me 1 second here. sorry, I had some people come in, and it would have caused a lot of audio issues if I kept recording, so I didn't. But anyway, so yeah, overall characters and plot are good. The overall plot itself is basically a murder mystery where the main character sees or suspects that one of his neighbors murdered his wife after she mysteriously stops being seen and she was bedridden. So, like, it doesn't make sense for her to just up and leave. There's a lot of elaborate twists and turns that make you think, oh, maybe he is just going crazy and hasn't, you know, left his apartment in a while. But, nah, it's great. Eventually, through, like, deductive planning and reasoning and stuff like that, they all manage to figure out and they get the bad guy in the end. But I wanted to talk about some cool, interesting facts about this movie that I just thought were cool. So, one, if you didn't know, the movie is actually based on an already existing piece of work, that being, It Had to Be Murder. It's a short story. I don't know if you can find it in anything, but yeah, it's probably in like collections of short stories somewhere. But interestingly, Rear Window's original story, It Must Be Murder, it doesn't have niece Lisa or Stella in it. The character in that version of the story doesn't have a girlfriend, and he does have a day houseman named Sam that checks on him, but it's not really as big of a character or anything like that. And also, the main character's iconic leg injury isn't even mentioned until the very last line of the short story. But yeah, so that's one cool fact. Sorry, hang on here. I'm like flipping through my notes here. Oh, also, Alfred Hitchcock modeled Rear Window's villain, the main character. He modeled him after a producer that he hated. So that's nice. he modeled him after David O. Slezenek, something like that. Yeah, but he believed that that guy meddled too much with his movies, so he modeled him after him, which is hilarious. But yeah, also Miss Torso, the ballerina girl in Rear Window. Yeah, she was 17. She was underage. But on to the next fact. The songwriter, the guy that plays the piano, was also a songwriter in real life. So that's nice. He recorded the Alvin and the Chipmunk song. Wow. Isn't that a nice cameo? But also, Rear Window's set caused like an exorbitant amount of cash. Like, I'm talking like an insane amount. The design cost $9,000, and to build it cost $72,000. If you adjust that to modern day inflation, that means the set alone cost $728,805 in total. The final set included 7 apartment buildings and 3 other entire buildings on the other side of the street. It also had 31 apartments, although only a handful were fully furnished. But still, that is some serious cash to blow on just like a small set. Oh, man. But also one last fact here. Alfred Hitchcock deliberately misdirected the actors in the movie just for laughs. gotta love Alfred Hitchcock, man. Gotta love him. he would give them like wrong directions or be like, yeah, do this thing, and it was something like ridiculous or something, or just something that just clearly wasn't meant to be in the movie. But yeah. So like, he just basically messed with the actors on set just to have fun with them. But yeah, anyway, the film itself is beloved by many, so you don't just have to take my word for it. It has an 85% on IMDb, Letterboxd gave it a 4.3 out of 5. It has a 92% on Google and a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. So yeah, this movie is beloved by all. You don't just have to take my word for it. You can watch it with an Amazon Prime subscription. And then of course, there's obviously digital and physical copies floating around that you can find and buy if you prefer to do it that way. But yeah, anyway, movie, 10 out of 10. Highly recommend it to any fans that are like fans of thrillers or anything like that. Also, like, I'd say it's like a kind of a nice introductory movie for like if you're trying to get somebody into like, you know, the suspenseful or, you know, like edge of your seat type thing. Like if you're like trying to get somebody into that genre of movie, I'd say that this is like a good movie for like getting them like into it, like, you know, dipping their toes into that genre and like, you know, showing them what the genre is really all about. I feel like this is a good movie for that. But anyway, that brings an end to this episode of the podcast. Hope you all enjoyed. I'll see you guys Tuesday and Thursday next week for the narrations, and I'll see you guys right back here next week, next Saturday, for another episode of the podcast. In that episode, I will probably be talking about Willy's Wonderland. So you guys can all look forward to that. But until then, bye guys, I love you.